Blog Talk Radio.
It's the sport of kings, better than diamond rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow, referees whistle blows, weekend warriors toe-to-toe, football.
So, old-timers, do you remember their names? Like Bronco Nagurski and Night Train Lane, Bulldog Turner, my man Sam Huff, in the snow and the mud, they were still real tough, Crazy Leg Turks. And remember Raymond Berry asked me if they hit hard, and I would say Berry, Paul, Christian, Buddy, Young Lady Moore, it's them I adore, they seem to always score, and sprinkle defensive. Gene Big Daddy Listen was a man severe. You have Steve Van Buren and Otto Graham. Johnny United had the arm of a Superman. We had Charlie Trippi and Tino Marquette. If you're searching for a champion, they're your best bet. Which Oscar quarterback, like Johnny Lou Jack or even Sid Luckman, as a matter of fact. Do you remember Red Brains, the galloping ghost? He could do a 95 running coast to coast. You had Norm Van Brocklin, a real great player, so swift with his moves that he could be mayor. Why a fiddle, Ali Mack? I remember all those guys from back in the days.
It's the sport of kings, better than diamond rings. That's why we're here to sing football.
Football. Hey, woo! It is the Game of Kings, and it's time for another episode of the podcast that's better than diamond rings. The King for a Day Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host and the commissioner of King for a Day, Rick Goreski, and today is all about reviews and previews as we put a bow on week one of our King for a Day regular season and then foreshadow week two. So first, let me click a button here, pull up my notes, and let's kick off by reviewing who did what, starting in the Gothic Conference. By the numbers, that makes half the games for the Gothic Conference, half the games were decided by 8 points or less, and half the games were blowouts. The hard luck award this week goes to Brian Getter's Wolfpack, who scored 106 points in a losing effort to Ken Banier's Hurricanes, who scored 114. The Hurricanes' 114 points were the high score in the Gothic in week one, and Wolfpack had just one of those weeks that I think we've all had. Well, all of us except Kellett's Muskego Raiders. Hey, Kellett, it's Mango Week, buddy, so I'm pouring gas on the fire here. Back on track, we've all had that week where we score the second highest points, and just by chance, we end up facing the team that scored the most points. What makes the loss so rough for the Wolfpack, makes it even harder to swallow, is that it was a division game, so he not only goes 0-1, but he falls down a game to Ken in the division for tiebreakers and division records. Just a horrible way to start the year. Wolfpack was a favorite in the preseason prediction show, so I think he'll be fine, but the consensus pick to win the division gets rocked in week one by the crafty vet, Kenny, and his Hurricanes. By the way, if this match was best ball format, the Hurricanes still would have won by a score of 120 to 115. Next up is the runner-up for Week 1's Hard Luck Award, the inaugural recipient of the F.U. Julio Jones, F.U. Indeed Award, Travis Elkenberg's Damage Inc., who now find themselves 0-1 after watching Julio Jones' 21-point Monday Night Football effort pull Scott Phillips' A-team to a big come-from-behind victory by a score of 81-76. So again, they're Jones puts up 21 points, and A-team wins by 5. The win, of course, causes Damage Inc. to take to the league message board, leaving a little bit of fan mail for Julio Jones. Damage's big mistake was starting Niall Davis of the Chiefs over Eric Decker of the Jets. That or leaving Julius Peppers on his bench with 10 points, but I mean, hindsight's 20/20, and I'm not sure many people would have started Peppers. A lot of guys would have benched Davis, though, and that's got to be eating away at Travis right now. For Scott Phillips, Julio sure did bail the A-team out of numerous poor lineup decisions. Again, hindsight's 20/20, but Scott put DeMario Davis and then Perriman of the Chargers, who together got him 3 points, while Derek Johnson and Thomas Davis sat on the bench with 12 points each. I didn't even mention Morgan from Tennessee on his bench with 11 points, but that's because I don't know that too many guys would have started Morgan. But the point here is that A-team left a lot of points on the bench in week one. They still get the victory thanks to F.U. Julio Jones. F.U. indeed. Best ball format would have had A-team winning this game 125-96. Our third match from the Gothic Conference. Those damn mosquito raiders. I said mosquito. That's right, because they're a pest, and I want to slap them down. The mosquito raiders. Mark Kellett's his team rode an 18-point effort by DeAndre Hopkins and pulled out an 8-point win over Kurt Thrasher's Made Men by a score of 85-77. Tell me that doesn't sting a little bit if you're Curtis. It's worth mentioning that when our panel reviewed teams and made preseason predictions that the weak point of Made Men's roster, I think everybody talked about it, was the tight end position. And here we are in week one. The key stat to look at in this game between Kurt and Mark Kellett is the Muskego Raiders get 9 points out of their tight end spot with Martellus Bennett, while Made Men got a goose egg with Josh Hill of the Saints. Raiders plus 9 at tight end. Games decided by 8 points. It's not a stretch to say that tight end decided this matchup. So best ball format would have had the Raiders winning the match 96-88. One second, guys. Had to fix my chair. Live radio. So, next onward to the blowouts in the Gothic. D-Risk. D-Risk's league record losing streak continues as Dave Korducky's team drops the opener to Pete Tarantino's Make It Rain by a score of 83-67. Dave's team has now lost a league record 13 games in a row. They've not won a game since week 12 of the 2013 regular season. They've actually lost 14 in a row if you count their round one playoff loss back in 2013. So it's been a rough stretch for Dave Korducky's squad. Not much has clicked for D-Risk in the first game of 2015. A total of 8 players score 4 points or less, the worst of all being Peyton Manning's negative 2 points. Looking back at the players Dave has, you have to think he's going to get off the snide soon. I mean, for Pete's sake, his team was solid. He hit on almost all of his offensive flex guys with Alfred Morris, Percy Harvin, Jordan Matthews, all putting up 6 points. Calvin Johnson did blank him, but I'm sure that's not going to, you know, Calvin's going to have plenty more good games than he has bad games. A-Rod got him a solid 18 points. The place kicker spot got him a 7 plus a bonus. That's 10 points right there at kicker. Where Rain is likely nervous is their defense, which did look bad. Nobody scored in double digits. The high score was Tulloch with 8 points. 4 of Pete's 5 other starters put up 5 points or less, and the other starter put up 6 points. So good and bad for Pete. I mean, at the end of the day, he got a win, and that's what counts. So best ball format, by the way, would have had Make It Rain winning 94-88. And again, I hope everybody knows by now best ball format. What that really means is that if a computer just took your best players at each position and formed a lineup, what are the most possible potential points you could have gotten out of that squad that week? And that's where I'm listing the best ball scores for every team as I do these. Moving on, the Pale Riders versus 4U2 NV is up next. Bucko's Pale Riders rode a balanced effort, 30 points on offense, 7 points by the place kicker, and 34 points on defense in claiming their first victory of the 2015 season by a score of 71-50. For all the crap that Tom took for starting Jameis Winston, it turned out it was the right call, as Winston, despite his poor play, put up 9 points while Pale's backup quarterback, Eli Manning, got blanked. More impressive, Tom left a lot of points on the bench this week, such as Tyler Eifert's 18 points, 9 points apiece at linebacker with Cushing and Brandon Marshall, and then 13 big points by defensive back Antoine Bethea of the 49ers. For Borkowski's team, Bork's team, you can't find fault with 4U2NV for starting what they did. There were a lot of points on the bench, but truth be told, the starting lineup for 4U2NV is pretty much what anyone would have set heading into week one if they had that roster. Woodhead had 12 on the bench. Brandon Marshall of Jets had 11 points on the bench, but who would have taken Edelman of the Patriots, LeSean McCoy, or Devontae Adams out of their lineup to start any of those guys? At the end of the day, the big guns just didn't fire for Borkowski's squad. Beckham Jr. didn't light it up like he did at the end of last year. Russell Wilson had a tame 4 points in week one. Greg Olsen only got 1 point, for crying out loud. That might end up being amongst his three lowest games of the entire year. Jordan Reed sits on the bench with 9 points. I mean, you can't really fault Bork. You just got to tear it up and go into week two and put this one behind you. Best Ball also had the Pale Riders winning by a score of 111-95, so just a forgettable week for 4U2NV. And speaking of forgettable weeks, that's exactly what Brian Koch's Old Helm Ogres would like to do after a week one thrashing at the hands of Kurt Kujawa's powerful Legion of Doom. Final score was 94-58, a 36-point loss. Injuries tore the Ogres up as Mike Evans didn't even play. DeSean Jackson left the game early with an injury. Stafford banged up his arm or shoulder or something. Bobby Wagner got banged up too. Nobody on the Ogres reached 10 points this week. High score was Eric Ebron with 9 points. And I think if you looked at his team beforehand, nobody saw this coming. If you're Brian, I think you just have to hope that you got the worst game out of the way right off the bat. On the flip side, my personal pick to win it all in 2015 comes out the gate strong as Legion of Doom rides a very strong defensive and place kicker performance to an easy victory. Every defensive player on Legion of Doom's team scored 7 points or more, with the high being 12 out of Paul Warlow. Brandon McManus put up a sweet 16 points kicking the ball. 68 points that Legion of Doom got out of their place kicker and defense alone was enough to beat the Ogres. So nice job by Legion of Doom. Kurt Kujawa's squad still looking good. Best Ball had Legion of Doom winning in this one 130-82. So that ends week one's Gothic Conference review. Let's move over to the Renaissance Conference, where the story was kind of the haves and have-nots. There was one, count them, one close game out of six in the Renaissance Conference in week one. All the rest of the games were ridiculous blowouts. I mean, the Gothic Conference, again, six teams, three were within 8 points, three were blowouts. Five blowouts, one close game in the Renaissance Conference. In the only close game of the week, Kyle Koch's Irishmen, the most savage team from our prediction shows, tells the so-called experts where they can stick their predictions by edging out Gar Nelson's Beerman's Brawlers by a score of 82-78. Kyle's team had a lot of points on the bench, too, with Marcus Mariota's 24 points, Julius Peppers 10, Antoine Bethea's 13. Gar's team made a big push to try and pull this game out by putting up 14 points on Monday night, but Kyle's squad answered back with 12 points of their own on Monday night to hold on to a 4-point win. Kyle's team was led by the number one overall pick in the Renaissance Conference. J.J. Watt had 16 points, as well as a 12 spot out of Chris Ivory. On the Brawlers' side, they may not know how close they were to winning. Melvin Gordon, who was in the Brawlers' lineup as one of their old flex, just missed a touchdown in this game by a single – excuse me, he just missed a touchdown in this – in his week one game against Detroit. And the Chargers then brought Woodhead in, and Woodhead eventually scored the 6 points that Gordon almost scored. Had Gordon been able to complete the touchdown, then Beer would have won this game by a single point. That and leaving Bishop Sankey's 12 points on the bench are surely two things that are pecking away at the Brawlers as they enter week two. Best ball format would have had those Irishmen winning by a score of 118-104. On to the blowouts in no particular order here. My own team, pains me to say, my beloved Gators, were made into a nice pair of boots by Steve Wellman's Meat Puppets. Final score there was 96-51. There's no sugarcoating this. The Gators put up the lowest score in the league, continuing a horrible losing trend that extends back to last year where they finished 2-10 overall. So that's 3-11. You know, probably 3-12 if you go back to a loss the year, you know, in the playoffs the year before. But the Gators had a shot heading into Monday night's game. It wasn't as bad as it looked. But the Meat Puppets trotted out Carlos Hyde's 18 points to wipe out any thoughts of a comeback. The Gators' issues were many, but the biggest problem was their old flex where they got nothing out of all four starters. On the Meat Puppets side, the team that many had on the prediction panel for when we did our prediction show, picked to win it all, showed why, or win this division, showed why they were a favorite as they put up an impressive array of scoring. 18 points out of Aaron Rodgers, 18 points out of DeAndre Hopkins, another 18 out of Hyde I mentioned, 9 out of Jarvis Landry. The Puppets put up 96 points, and they played one player short as Mike Evans was a DNP. I guess, Steve, I guess you couldn't get your DNP in King for a day or Mad Dog. How, buddy? Great way to open the season for Steve Wellman's team in King for a day. Best ball had the Puppets also winning by a score of 116-59. Next up, one of the favorites, based on the post-draft prediction shows, looked every bit the part of a favorite as Brian Fram's Gracie's Got Game burst out of the gates strong with a 111-73 victory over Mike Thomas's Phantoms. To put this into perspective, there were only two spots in Gracie's lineup that you could even pick at. Chad Greenway and Avery Williamson each put up 2 points apiece. Beyond that, there's nothing bad you can say. Wait a minute, Charles Johnson put up a zero. He put up a zero on offense. I couldn't see it at first because it was buried amongst all the other points scored for the rest of the team. But there you go. You had three players out of 13 that disappointed. Everybody else put up solid points. 24 points out of Tom Brady, 15 out of Travis Kelce, 12 out of Jeremy Hill, 11 out of his defensive back, Earl Thomas. You know, this team even left points on the bench, too, via six-pack from Alfred Morris and a 10-spot from defensive back Calvin Pryor. For Mike Thomas's Phantoms, they didn't do that bad. But disappointing performances and injuries combined with facing the juggernaut that apparently is Gracie did him in. Negative 2 points from Peyton Manning is not only unexpected, but it's nearly unheard of. 1 point out of Greg Olsen is way under expectations. I still have trouble believing that. Sam Barrington's injury screwed the Phantoms as they got 1 point out of their starting deflex. Same thing with Charles Woodson leaving the game after only 5 points. Mike lost on both of those. He's one of those owners, Mike, who is going to be able to shake this bad loss off rather quickly, though. They have a lot of hope sitting on the bench. 18 points out of Tyler Eifert, 9 points out of Clay Matthews, and 9 points out of Brandon Marshall, linebacker from Denver. So best ball score would have had Gracie winning 130-114 in this game. In the biggest blowout of the week, and moving on, Andy Wellman's Kenosha Commandos shamed Bill Novak's Dirty Hippies by 49 points. Final score was 107-58. Shame, I say. Shame. The Hippies were in the same boat as Borkowski's squad in the Gothic Conference as the big-name high draft picks didn't pan out in week one, and that doomed the team to a loss. Russell Wilson's 4 points underwhelmed. Beckham Jr.'s goose egg hurt. C.J. Anderson's injury led to a zero. Just a bad start to the season for Bill's team. Nothing much on the bench to speak of. I picked Bill's team to win his division, so I'm thinking he will have a much better week two, but week one was ugly. For Andy, and the Kenosha Commandos. The story was solid, scoring up and down the lineup. If there are any doubters, 21 points from Gronkowski validated Andy's decisions to chase points over comparable for the tight end position with his first-round pick. Andy, the strategy there was that Gronkowski is so good that he'll just outscore the next closest guy by so many more points that, you know, it's a golden guy to have. It's kind of the same theory with J.J. Watt. And anybody that wanted to argue that, well, Gronkowski put up 21. So tossed in 17 from Romo and also from place kicker Matt Bryant to go along with nine points from Mark Ingram and Vincent Ray, linebacker Vincent Ray of Cincinnati. And you've got the recipe for success. It was an impressive piece of an impressive piece of Kenosha's win was how the defense overall scored. Every player except one player scored 6 points or more, just to break that down. Their defensive back scored 3 points, but beyond that, everyone else was 6 points, 7 points, 7 points, 8 points, and 9 points. And Andy left Eric Weddle and his 11 points for week one. Eric Weddle was on the bench. So this score easily could have been 8 points higher, as I'm sure Andy did contemplate starting Weddle in this one. On offense, Andy also had some room to breathe as he left Woodhead on the bench with 12 points. So a scary performance by Kenosha for the rest of the competition here in the Renaissance Conference, seeing him light the score up like that and have a few guys on the bench that, you know, he left some at the table. That's scary for the rest of us. Best ball score had Kenosha winning 139-175. The next team to talk about, Tyler Banier's Typhoons, put on a workmanlike performance in rubbing out Corey Manvilla's Saiyans. Final score was 90-59. I was going to say that the Saiyans played shorthanded because Cameron Wake put up a zero and Dez Bryant left with an injury, but then I saw that Tyler started Jonathan Stewart, so actually that's kind of even. Seriously, Corey's team experienced some of the worst luck in the league to start things off as they lost potentially their top offensive weapon in Dez Bryant for 4 to 8 weeks while also finding starting defensive lineman Cameron Wake injured, starting running back LeSean McCoy's fighting hamstring issues. It's hard to replace pieces like that on the fly, so bad breaks for Corey Manvilla. On the bright side, Corey did have some good performances this week that could help him get over his problems. Aaron Donald was a stud at defensive line with 15 points. I mean, that's fantastic. Who wouldn't take that? Who wouldn't take a third of that at defensive line? Corey did run a two defensive line defensive lineup this week. So with Wake injured, he can just plug Donald into the defensive line spot and push a linebacker or a defensive back into the D-flex spot that previously had been occupied by Cameron Wake. Corey's bench also featured Anthony Barr with 11 points, so Barr could easily slide into that D-flex spot. Also on the bench was Austin Safari Jenkins and his 15 points at tight end, as well as Amir Abdullah of Detroit with 9 points. To flip the switch and focus on the Typhoons. The Typhoons are just a solid squad, and this effort really reflects that. The Typhoons were one of three teams to have four, or and this is league-wide, this is Gothic and Renaissance Conference, the Typhoons were one of three teams to have four or more players score in double digits. The Wolfpack had 5 players score in double digits, and the Hurricanes had 4. And then the Typhoons had 4. Antonio Brown dropped 15 points. Forte, Warlow, and Posluszny all put up 12 points for the Typhoons. Ben Roethlisberger tossed in 9 points. Just a solid performance by Ty's Foons. Best ball would have had the Typhoons winning 105-98, by the way. So best ball tightened that match up quite a bit. Final score was 90-59. Final game of the Renaissance Conference. Tim Savore's Lost in the Sauce sent a message that teams in the red division are going to have to vie with his team to get to the division title. Lost in the Sauce took out Chris Koch's Champions of Chaos by a final score of 106-60. For Tim's team, it was a mix of explosive performances like that of 21 points for Julio Jones, 12 for Derek Johnson, 11 for Brandon Marshall of the Jets, to go along with solid performances from the rest of his team. Things like 7 points out of Robert Quinn, 10 points out of Tucker, his kicker, 9 points out of Navarro Bowman, 8 points out of Harrison Smith from the Vikings. Looking at Tim's overall team and his bench, there might be a quarterback controversy brewing here because he's got, you know, Carson Palmer outscored the starter Cam Newton 21-4. That was in week one. For the Champs of Chaos, it was kind of an echo of the Phantoms in the sense that there were disappointing performances up and down the roster to point to. Chris got nothing out of her 4 offensive flex spots. The worst was Demaryius Thomas, Frank Gore, and Devontae Adams all putting up goose eggs. Who would have predicted that, you know, going into the season, that those 3 players would get nothing? I think those were 3 of Chris's 4 first draft picks, her 4 top draft picks, and she got nothing out of them. Chris's top pick was linebacker Luke Kuechly, and he left his game with a bad concussion. And, yeah, he got 9 points, but he could have had a lot more, and now his availability heading into week 2 is up in the air. Defensively, the underperforming theme continued as Mario Williams mustered just 1 point. Jonathan Cyprin left the game early due to an injury, and he only ended up with 3 points. Timmons and Kerrigan, both linebackers, put up a measly 3 points. Keenan Robinson didn't do much better with 4 points. Just a forgettable night for the Champs. And at least they did have one big bright spot as Jason Witten put up 19 points from the tight end spot. That's really, really good for a tight end. Best ball score had lost in the sauce, winning this matchup 132-179. So that's it for the recaps in the Gothic and Renaissance Conference. Let me, if you don't mind, review the high-scoring teams and the high-scoring players for the week. The top 5 fantasy teams in King for a day this week. The Hurricanes with 114 points are number 1. Gracie's Got Game puts up 111 as number 2. Kenosha Commandos, 107 points in third place. And tied for 4th most points this week were Lost in the Sauce, 106 points, and Wolfpack, 106 points. The top quarterbacks this week in our league, Tom Brady put up 24 points. Gracie's Got Game and Hurricanes have Tom Brady. Marcus Mariota put up 24 points. He was owned by the Irishman. Carson Palmer put up 21 points, owned by Legion of Doom and Lost in the Sauce. Alex Smith put up 18. Aaron Rodgers put up 18 as well. For the sake of time, I'm not going to name who has every player. Just going to kind of give you the idea of who scored the most at each position. At running back, Carlos Hyde put up 18. That was the high for the entire league at running back. 4 different players or more tied at 12 points. Matt Forte, Danny Woodhead, Chris Ivory, and Marcel Reese. Top 5 wide receivers this week. Julio Jones put up 21 points to lead all receivers. DeAndre Hopkins had 18 points. Antonio Brown had 15. James Jones and Tavon Austin each had 12. At tight end, the top tight ends, Rob Gronkowski, 21 points, led all tight ends. Jason Witten, 19. Tyler Eifert, 18. Travis Kelce and Austin Safari-Jenkins each had 15. Top kickers this week, 14 points for both Matt Bryant and Josh Brown, 13 points for Zach Hocker, Brandon McManus, 13 points. Zach Hocker had 13, by the way. 14 points each for Matt Bryant and Josh Brown. Hocker and McManus have 13. Robbie Gold had 12. Top defensive lineman, J.J. Watt, 16 points. Aaron Donald, 15 points. Allen Bailey, 12 points. Chris Clemens, 11, and Geno Atkins, 9. Top linebackers, Preston Smith led the way, along with Usani Unga of the Giants, with 13 points each. Thomas Davis, Derek Johnson, Paul Posluszny each had 12. I think there might have been some other linebackers that had 12 as well, but I'm reading off the website. Has a spot where you can click and see the top players, and forgive me if there's some that I'm not mentioning. Defensive backs, Kerry Williams, 18 points, along with Josh Norman, 18 points. Jimmy Smith of Baltimore, 17 points. Glover Quinn, 16. And Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, 15 points. Well, that was then. This is now. Week two is upon us. The Chiefs and the Broncos have actually already played as I taped this show on Saturday night, September 19th, 2015. What I wanted to do here was I wanted to do in the predictions portion of the podcast was to take the average points per player and add that up for each lineup to predict a winner. And unfortunately, the website doesn't give me this information. I would have to sit down and add everybody's players up manually. I just don't have time for that, at least for this week. So I'm just going to toss out my own thoughts on who I think is going to win, who has good matchups. I can tell you ahead of time it's meaningless, but these are my opinions nonetheless, and it'll be interesting, if anything, just to hear talk about King for a day and to listen to different matchups from different guys' opinions, including mine. So here we go. In the Gothic Conference, where the Pale Riders are facing off against Damage Inc., Tom Buckles took a lot of heat last week for starting Jameis Winston. What does he do in week two? He goes out and he picks up Marcus Mariota and pushes him right in as his starting quarterback against Cleveland this week. Cleveland's defense is pretty good, so I'm not sure that's going to pan out as well as Winston over Eli Manning in week one did. Keekly is a wild card in this one. Not sure if he's going to play. Big loss if he doesn't. Tom slid Eifert in over the injured Delanie Walker at tight end. LeGarrette Blount is back from suspension, and the Raiders in the Pale Riders lineup. I'd like to pick Damage Inc. here because I can see Mariota coming down to earth this week, but I'll be damned if Damage didn't leave Niall Davis in his lineup again this week. I thought it was a huge mistake in week one, and it cost him, and it's week two. He's got Terrence Williams from Dallas on the bench, and he's still got Niall Davis in the lineup. So this is either a mistake or fantasy malpractice. I'd have to assume that Damage Inc. didn't get a lineup change in before the Thursday game started. He probably got busy with work and didn't check it. As a result, I guess here my prediction, if Luck hooks up for two touchdowns with Dwayne Allen, then Damage Inc. will win. He has Luck and Dwayne Allen. If not, Pale Riders, I think, is going to squeak this one out. If Damage had Williams in the lineup, then I think I'd pick them straight up. I hate some of the lineup decisions at play here on both teams. I'm not big on Roddy White, and Damage Inc. has him in the lineup, but I do love Mark Ingram against the Buccaneers. I think Luck and the Colts come out big on the Jets on Monday Night Football. Cobb will score against Seattle. Damage's defense will be solid. For Pale, Jeremy Hill and Eifert are going to do well against San Diego. I think Amari Cooper has a crappy matchup against Baltimore, and we're not sure what's going to happen with Carr at quarterback. That makes that a shaky start, but defensively, Pale Riders has as good of players and matchups as anybody, and I hate the Mariota pick, but if you put Mariota in and take Luke Kuechly out, which I think is going to happen, then I think things kind of slant towards Damage Inc.'s way. So what I said is if you put Mariota in and remove Kuechly, I think that's kind of a double whammy. So I'm going to lean towards Damage. I don't know, maybe I predicted both guys. That's typical me. I'll pick both sides of it, and then whichever guy wins, I'll say I was right. But seriously, I think if Luck connects with Allen for a touchdown or two, I think Damage Inc. wins. Moving on, Hurricanes against Make It Rain is next. I hate to say this, but I couldn't believe the Hurricanes were the highest-scoring team in the Gothic in Week 1. So I think they're going to come down to earth in Week 2. I just didn't like the squad coming out of the draft, and maybe it's going to prove me wrong in Week 2, but I'm taking Make It Rain to win. Ken's offensive flex is very weak. Now he's got Hilton injured and on the bench. He's starting Ronnie Hillman. DeAndre Levy is injured, so there's a starting linebacker out. Buffalo may not win, but they're not going to give up 30 to New England either. So I think the combo of Brady and Gronkowski are going to be contained this week. They'll get some points, but I don't think it's going to be a breakout like last week. No way the Hurricanes put up 100 points this week based on their matchups. On the flip side for Make It Rain, first, what the hell is Heron still doing on his team 2 weeks after the Colts cut him? Maybe Pete's got a side bet that he can win with one roster spot, tied behind his back. I mean, looking at this, looking a little further, what the hell is Pete doing with his roster here, period? I see James Starks on here. He's got Brandon LaFell from the Patriots on his team, and LaFell is out for at least half the fantasy season. Nathan Allen of the Raiders is on IR with a designation to return, which means he's out for at least half the season. I mean, damn, I cut Jonas Gray this week, and he was cut in real life from New England and Miami, and now I wish I'd have checked with Pete on a trade. Maybe Gray, apparently that's his kind of guy if I'm looking at his roster here. He's holding other guys who were only cut or injured as part of one team. I mean, Gray was cut from two teams, and it's only week two. I'm just screwing around with you, Pete. Back to the matchup with the Hurricanes. On Rain's side, I could see Jimmy Graham giving the Packers linebackers fits all night. So I think Rain scores points there. I also think Calvin Johnson has the kind of game this week against Minnesota that reminds people why he's Calvin Johnson. I think Tulloch is in a good spot, as Levy is, and potentially not going to play. I'm going to go with Make It Rain on this one. Next contest is Legion of Doom versus Made Men. Speaking of Jonas Gray, I'm not making this up. I just looked, and Made Men has Gray still on their team. Curtis, call Pete. It's the deal of the century waiting for you, man. Then again, maybe Pete should call Kurt. They're both collecting guys that aren't playing. Legion of Doom versus Made Men looks like a pretty even matchup. Made Men have Adrian Peterson against Detroit. I think Peterson's going to break out unless the stupid Minnesota coaches choose not to use him like last week. Murray has the homecoming game against Dallas. Landry should carve up Jacksonville. Kujawa has a nice matchup with Forsett against Oakland, but I read this morning that Chris Ivory has a hamstring issue, so he might not go. Lots of wide receivers on Legion of Doom's deep bench to replace him. Antonio Brown should tear up the Niners. This is really interesting. Legion of Doom is trotting out Carson Palmer on the road against Chicago over Matt Ryan on the road against the Giants. And he's also got Steve Smith of Baltimore against Oakland. Knowing the Made Men got a nice head start via the Thursday game with 15 out of Emmanuel Sanders and 13 points out of Justin Houston, I understand going for the home run swing with Palmer against the Bears, but I don't like Smith against Oakland. That game could quickly get out of hand, and then Baltimore won't throw. It's kind of Smith better get his points early, because I'm guessing it's a Forsett and Allen show the rest of the game. And with Forsett already in the lineup, the Smith move looks even more odd. Maybe Kujawa's got a gut feeling, though, and you always need to go with your gut in these cases. You know, my gut says right now Made Men takes this particular game. A-team taking on 4U2NV is next. Tough game to predict. For 4U2NV, Wilson plays big against Green Bay. McCoy might not play. Beckham Jr. versus Atlanta could be big points. Greg Olsen will score at least 9 this week, in my opinion. Some tough matchups on the bench with Edelman against Buffalo, Devontae Adams against Seattle. Looking at A-team's matchups, they're juicy as juicy gets for fantasy owners. Tannehill against Jacksonville, Randall against Philly, Cooks against a Tampa Bay team, that's Cooks from New Orleans, against a Tampa team that just made Mariota look like Dan Marino, Julio Jones against the Giants, Thomas Davis against Houston, and in a situation where Kuechly might not play or may be limited, Cyprin isn't going to play, so he's going to have to sub him out, but great matchups this week for the A-team. I'm going to pick Scott Phillips' A-team. D-Risk takes on Wolfpack in a game where, before I even look at the teams, has a bad feel to it for Wolfpack. First, D-Risk has lost 14 games in a row dating back to the 2013 season. Every week they don't win, I think it becomes less and less attractive to play this guy. They will win another game, and that luck is bound to turn around, so the odds are that one of the next handful of opponents are going to walk away with a loss against D-Risk. I mean, come on, it's been since 2013. You look at Wolfpack, who just had a ridiculous tough luck loss to the Hurricanes, where Wolf scored the second most points in the conference, only to face off against the top-scoring team. I just feel uncomfortable in this one if I were Brian. I think Wolfpack is the better team, but the situation sucks. Forget the matchups. I'm predicting another tough road, bad luck loss for Wolfpack. I think D-Risk wins this one. Last game in the Gothic, Brian Koch's Oldham Ogres and Mark Kellett's Muskego Raiders. Based on the matchups this week and the fact that the Ogres are still unsettled with the Mike Evans situations, picking the Muskego Raiders. I don't like the starting D'Angelo Williams over Frank Gore. I think the Raiders are I think the Raiders matchups are better this week. That, and if you look at the Ogres squad, they're really missing players like Mike Evans and Todd Gurley. You put a healthy Gurley and Evans in the lineup, and it's a much tougher call here. For the Ogres without Evans and Gurley, I should say that I don't think Evans will play. He hasn't practiced this week outside of a limited basis, so I think the team will hold him for one more week at least. Fitzgerald has a nice matchup this week, but that alone is kind of an enigma in the sense that in any given week it could be Josh Brown or Michael Floyd or Larry Fitzgerald that gets the game ball. Brian has Ebron in the lineup, and I think this is the week to start Ertz. I'd rather go up against the Cowboys linebackers with my tight end than the Vikings linebackers. Brian may regret not finding room in his lineup for Ertz, you know, but with the old flex, he doesn't have to pick one over the other. He could swap Evans out if he doesn't play, and I don't think he will, and then he could push Ertz in. So looking at backup lists, old flex is looking at his backup list right now, he's got Bishop Sankey number one, so Ogres are going to need to keep. Ogres are currently keeping Ertz on the bench. The Muskego Raiders are my pick. Speaking of the Raiders, I'll have a Mango Bowl prediction at the end of the show. Speaking of the end of the show, I got 5 minutes left, so I am going to go ahead and shut the show down right now. I'm going to start it off with part two, which is going to take place. I'll make a 15-minute show and bring the show right back up here in a cup in just a minute or two. So for now, let's go ahead. We're going to end it the way we came in. Little LL Cool J from the movie Wildcats. Football.
Better than nodding rings. That's why we're here to sing.